Welcome back to the Stanford Healthcare AI Podcast. And DJ, we're so glad to have you.
Hey, good to be here.
So,
We're gonna get lit here on this on and light some fires that we're gonna have to deal with later.
this
That's
is
the
perfect.
goal.
As someone who, I guess, newly is out of a job, then you get to be fully unfiltered. DJ is someone who needs no introduction. Right, as the former US chief data scientist, has built a handful of companies. You may have heard of Devoted or LinkedIn, was been an investor, obviously involved in the policy world. And so thank you for being here. One of the things that we'll go through that actually we were just starting to talk about, but you've had some interesting roles in government, and let's go to the hot button issues, cybersecurity. So we were talking about hospitals. There's Project Glasswing. Bring up some background, but like, what is going to happen? Like, for those of you, maybe I'll pull up some background. But like, what's happening right now? Why are people so on edge? And like, what is going to happen for healthcare?
Well, I think the first thing we should talk about is like what's going to happen to all of us with all these AI models and everything that's taking place. It's like who can predict more than 2 weeks in the future is kind of like I think we're all sort of in that space. I think the thing that we do know is the health system has been very slow to adopt technology overall. Big chunk of that, which was put in place during the Obama administration, is $30 billion of taxpayer money to digitize the health system to get health records. There, $30 billion, and we had like in that moment, we've had all that digitization happen. How much of that has actually really benefited the patient? Like most of the data science and everything that's gone into things has really benefited the payer, the system. There's definitely benefits and advantages for the patient, but nowhere on the same orders of magnitude that we're talking about here. And so when we think about AI, what's the benefit for the patient versus the system or those things? That's where we get into this. And then you start asking like, where's the place where the attack is going to happen first, or the disruption, or the opportunity and the benefits? And almost in all things, advantage goes to entropy. It goes to things where there's chaos. That means bad guys. And cybersecurity is that first spot. So, health system has basically been a sitting target. I argued very heavily during both the Obama time period, the Trump first administration as well, that healthcare needs to be part of our national critical infrastructure and it needs to be treated as such with the defenses put around it. But right now, and I think you guys mentioned, like, does any health system have access to Mythos? That's kind of crazy. And like, if they did, would they even know what to do with it? Like, well, like, which of them is going to know what to do with it? Like, that's a sad state we're in. So I'm worried about like what happens. And you don't have to be like super AI model. I think you honestly are going to see much more happen with just dumb models that are good, like today's base level models are going to be able to hammer you. And this is going to come from nation states. It's going to come from Iran. It's going to come from North Korea, like it traditionally does at 3 p.m. on Friday, and slam India.
I mean, and this is such a crazy thing, because like for so long, like again, as you know, the cloud companies are always, you know, trying to make a case, as they would, it's their business model, of why, you know, here's the list of reasons why you should go to the cloud. We can scale, we can get it, you know, economies of scale, we can amortize costs across different, you know, large center, you know, all the different things, right? The access. And then sort of security always kind of was a difficult one for, I would say, probably around the 2010, let's say, to 2015 range, where it was like, yeah, but like if there's a cyber attack, I feel like I'm a small target. I'm a small health system. I'm on-prem. If I go to the cloud, doesn't that make the surface area for attack much more likely? You know, that was kind of the mentality. Whether it was right or not, we can debate that. But then you kind of fast forward, and then you get to a place where being a small center like on-prem with, you know, large amounts of health records that have so many financial implications down the line if there were to be an attack or a breach, let alone the sort of paralysis of care that happens when these things, and now you've got maybe the perfect target. And to your point, it's not just, you know, the malicious hacker in some basement somewhere in, you know, wherever, rural, wherever. It's now, it's like you said, nation states. And shout out to Chris Longhurst, who's now the CEO of Seattle Children's, but he was a big proponent of the, hey, government, help us out, because how is it fair that we have to, as an independent health system or nonprofit organization, how could we possibly defend against a nation-funded effort to take down our healthcare? So it really starts to rise to the level of policy, and I don't know if I've ever seen. And then at the same time, project like Mythos, like Glasswing, as maybe some of the audience know about, this idea that we have this really powerful model that can hack very, very common software, but yet it didn't seem like there was healthcare included in that list. And that another puzzling thing, because maybe you argue that the healthcare sits on the software that they're helping to patch, but still, it seems to me that there's a missed opportunity here where the larger
Yeah,
players could help.
I don't think the hospital system has even attempted to think about this, right? I think their thought process is still stuck like on open evidence and like, hey, how do I do prior auths faster?
Right.
Like, I think that's where their head is at, honestly, in the conversations I've had. But you look at like some of these health systems, they got to cover like more, they got to figure out how to save more than $1 million a day coming up with these budget with the budget cuts that are being implemented through HR1, the big beautiful bill. There's going to be many more downstream impacts. So the issue set that's coming on this, and you don't need super, you don't need your super AI to take down the system. And I think people forgot like how paralyzing the change attack was on the healthcare system. But you don't need somebody who's a true attacker needing cyber ransom. This is how you just create, this is terrorism. This is straight up ways to attack. And it can be dumb attacks, somebody just messing around, doing something dumb, and you unleash it at healthcare and you're going to take out stuff. So I'm really negative on this. The other portion I think that is a big miss on the federal side is we've got too many different competing areas for cybersecurity. It's like Secret Service owns a part, FBI owns a part, DHS through CISA owns a part, DOJ kind of different separate portions. And so where's the ownership? Who's the owner? And that's something we've argued for quite a while is how do you bring those people into the tent? Because you need collaboration, like you're seeing stuff on the outside that the federal government isn't seeing, and vice versa. And so you need to bring them in. A lot of that is at different levels of classification, but you have to let them know, like, as the federal government knows an attack is coming from North Korea or Iran, and we're not telling somebody's health system to do that, we're endangering lives. And we need to think, we need to really radically think this way. And the attacks on CISA and everything else by the administration on demand, sort of taking these out for political reasons, I think is not going to serve any of us well.
So this is an uplifting way to
Yeah, you
start a
totally want to start. Did
conversation and
you
talk
bring
about
the scotch?
cyber
Or
threats. That's
I
on that
didn't
that's on
realize I was
me.
supposed to bring scotch. My bad.
Is I you know and I'm looking at the news articles we pulled. There's United Health talking about a $3 billion AI investment, and they are talking about reducing prior auth times and making a few things better. But anyone have a uplifting piece of news maybe to shift to for a little bit? You talked about
Totally.
the.
Like, I mean, like, I think it's very easy to get focused on that. But at the same time, you look at how much more engaged people are in taking management and ownership of their health and themselves. And I think there's a lot to quibble with around, Dr. Google and Dr. GPT kind of versions. But the level of engagement empowerment is pretty awesome. I think that's really cool to see. And I think that's good news. That's good news for all of us, especially on the concept of what good healthcare is going to look like. I think the number of physicians that are empowered through tools like Open Evidence is really inspiring. I know there's lots of questions around that, but I think the latest results were two-thirds of all physicians are using it now. It's up from a half, like 50% just a few weeks ago. So that's kind of truly viral. And so the access there, obviously, I'm also involved in a company called Consensus, which is like think of open evidence for general science. Now, anybody can get AI tools to use against broad-based models. And now maybe hopefully we'll get a bunch of cross-pollination there. And now I'm hoping what people realize is part of the long pole here, and you guys know this because you've both been in the space doing this physically yourselves, is we're hopefully going to get useful data because like you're going to see the limitations of what you can only do so much until you have this. And you know, I'm doing this too through Devoted Health. And like the AIification of things is helping. And we're not cutting jobs when done right. We've figured out what additional jobs we need. And this is going to increase time to actual real benefits to people.
Yeah, I mean that's been a theme of the pod for sure. And like to your point, like the consumer engagement is off the charts. And it's not just the super tech forwards, you know, savvy. It is literally almost everyone. I mean, like you hear anecdotal stuff all the time, but the data that we've shown in previous episodes, just in terms of it's particularly in areas where there's a limited or lower access to care, the disproportionate increase in conversations with the frontier models and healthcare. It's astounding. It's really great. And on the open evidence point, I mean, my take is like, listen, this has been such a vacuum, right? Because of the health system sort of in a lot of places have said, especially early on, you must not use, we'll block the IPX, you know, address access to, and they're sort of like, well, what the heck? You know, like we know it's useful because we have the consumer model. And so I think that disconnect created a vacuum for open evidence to come in. And they've done a tremendous job, but at the same time, they've also created a really cool market because they grew so fast. You know, the GPT for clinicians that launched just about a few weeks ago. Again, you have to have an MPI number, which we can
I was
all,
going to say, look, you
yeah,
elitist doctors, don't you
which
have MPI numbers?
kind of,
But yeah,
kind of. I've heard plenty of stories of people just looking up MPI numbers, and
which
all of a
is, but
sudden,
you're outside the terms of service then,
it's not
though,
a
which I
major
would
one,
never do.
but no, but they made me do a thing where like I did my MPI number and then I had to show my license and then I had to take a picture. So
Oh,
like
really?
they, yeah, so they did legit verification on the GPT for clinicians side. And the interesting thing though is like now this is a really interesting market because it hasn't really existed in this way before. It's almost like a consumer hybrid enterprise. And I don't know where this leads, but I'm excited because they literally have, you know, sort of it broken down by specialty. Choose which specialty you're in. Which again, I don't have any insider knowledge at this point, but it made me wonder whether they're doing reinforcement learning along certain tracks to like really harden the model specifically for. Anyway, it really is exciting. So back to the point about being uplifting, I think that the hands of the clinicians with instant access to incredible knowledge, caveats abound, but still where this trajectory is going, and then on the clinician side. I couldn't be more excited about where this is
Yeah,
headed.
but let's play
So.
this forward because you bring up a really important point. So when you think about the doctor-patient relationship, you know, we've always had this paternalistic approach to the patient. And I remember when we started Precision Medicine Initiative, Cancer Moonshot, all these things, people are like, never give that information to the patient. They're going to go get a double mastectomy tomorrow. And you're like, really? Now, are there people who are going to do radical things? Look, people took bleach because one president said so, right? To treat COVID. So like that, like the numbers in poison control went up. Like, so people are going to do some dumb things. But also, I think the question is, if we have technology that is so powerful, what is our responsibility? Is it to gatekeep it from people, or is it to open it up to allow people to have access to it? When the pop the like, you know, as I've been going around the country doing office hours at college campuses and cities all around the country, and the thing I hear all the time on the left and on the right, it's the same, very a lot of anti-AI sentiment. The one place where you kind of are like, look, I don't have access to, like, I'm going to wait 6 months to get to the doctor. I'm going to get 7 minutes. I'm not going to get, like, you know, the frustration and the populist anger there actually has an avenue for a solution with technology done correctly. And so I think we have this moment where we say, look, you can't see one of us as a clinician. I'm not one, obviously, but you know what? What if we gave you at least access so that you could be in control of your destiny? That I think is something that we actually need to reckon with on a moral basis as a society and as technologists and as care providers.
I mean, whether we want to reckon with it or not, it's happening, right? And it's happening at scale now, right? The ChatGPT for Health, it is the largest health application ever. And, it kind of happened on accident, right? That wasn't the intention of how they started, but, they've said it publicly in many places. It just, the demand is there. The inability to access care is interesting. I will say one interesting piece, though, and whether on the physician side for things like open evidence or the physician chat GPT version or the patient version, DJ, I know you do a class with Zeke Emanuel. I was catching up with him at a conference and I was arguing this point, right? We're all AI pilled here on this call. And for people who aren't, this is just what people are thinking about these tools all the time and convinced they're going to help. Where I was struggling with Zeke, which is like, what is the metric that will change? What is the, because consumers have access to these tools, and I struggled with this actually, because consumers have access to these tools, what is the health metric that is going to change? Is it going to be diabetes control, blood pressure rates? Is it going to be chronic conditions that people are going to figure out how to solve? But I'm curious, like
Well,
open to ideas, like what is the metric that's going to change?
if AI doesn't hurry up, the GLP agonist race will clear all the problems. I'm just kidding, but it's sort of not really though. But
No,
it's
but
almost a
I think
race
this is
between the two.
actually this is the part that actually is there. The metric that we don't see right now is the social media influencer metric. There's already a ton of stuff that's happening. There's increasingly amount of people that are taking into their hands off-label or other ways or doing kind of their own stuff, GLP microdosing or other things through other areas. So we almost have this shadow healthcare market, and including the one that you start to hear about where people don't meet the criteria. It could be a GLP-1, it could be one of the new types of cardiovascular drugs or other type of things. It could be hormone therapies. There's a whole range of these things where somebody says, look, I'm going to go on to this stuff prior to what the guidelines are, because if I don't, I will go on it, but I'll be way sicker when I do, and then I'll be covered for it. And so they're effectively doing it. And so you have that shadow side. Then you have the whole another shadow side, which you might call the kind of the, well, that's clinically dubious. Go peptides, right? Like all this kind of lane and all that side. Then I think what we have to ask is like, what is good information look like from these models and those type of things? I think there's a bucket where my hope is done correctly, a lot more people will say, oh yeah, it's the right thing to do is to get vaccinated. The right thing to do is these things. And so we'll get this other layer of informed people being smart. That is my hope of what will
So let
take
me push
place.
you on it though. You
Sure.
believe because of ChatGPT and equivalent consumer tools, vaccination rates measurement, right? You're a data scientist. We're all
Oh,
data.
if you had to
Vaccination rates will
predict,
go up. So what
no,
is
I'm
the
saying,
metric? No, the
I,
bet. And this is why I struggled. I agree
right,
with
like
everything you're
if I don't think
saying.
there's a single metric that you can bet on. That's the problem. The bet that I would have is if you kind of said, like there's to get super nerdy, there's some sort of Shannon information theoretic, like the amount of knowledgeable, the knowledge level for a person to take good care, like better care of themselves should go up. And that should round out with the appropriate access to clinical care that you are going to do the like you're going to get the right thing. Now, let's suppose ChatGPT or Claude or whoever says you really should need to get your colonoscopy, but you're like, well, you know what? I don't have access. I don't have the ACA subsidies. I don't have access to care or whatever. I'm laid off, and you're not going to get your colonoscopy. Well, doesn't matter what we did with AI, you're screwed, right? Now, like you could also say the other side of this on this is I do think what you'll see some metrics a lot better if we figure out how to pay for it is AI augmentation on top of diagnostic testing, right? Whether that's something like classic some kind of angiogram kind of thing or CT calcium score kind of stuff or colonoscopy overlay, I think done correctly, you'll save a ton of lives. But people aren't going to have access to that. and there's no payment model for it.
I mean, I so I'm gonna call I'm actually gonna I'm gonna take a swing here on this, actually. I'm gonna say, first of all, the metric, I'm just gonna say high level metric, I'm gonna say life expectancy. I think it's gonna go up. Now, I have two potential trends that I'm gonna argue for. One is, let's just assume, with all the caveats, that folks are accessing GPT with their healthcare. Okay, let's just say. Now, there may be some political landmines and things that we've done poorly in the past in terms of communication. Vaccination would certainly be in that bucket. But let's setting that aside, I think that the amount of curiosity and potentially the distrust or maybe lack of access, whatever the combination of factors are with the traditional healthcare system, have pushed people in a direction to potentially even be willing to pay out of pocket for a variety of healthcare needs. In fact, I've seen even arguments that were like, if I had just saved the money that I would have been paying to insurance, or I have this bill. And like, by the way, GPT showed me how to negotiate a cash payment, and it turned out to be shockingly low compared to list price. Like, this kind of stuff is like bubbling up in combination with the GLPs and some of the direct-to-consumer things that pharma is doing. Like, I just feel like there's a confluence of factors. I keep getting flabbergasted by the data coming out of the GLPs, not to over-index on it, but I do think it's, people stop doing addictive behaviors, their drinking is down. Like, it's just all these factors. I'm going to call the shot and say, does the AI become a part of a catalyst to people taking more ownership? And potentially, I'm going to say the metric I'm going to look for is life expectancy.
So
I
that should be the metric. I
don't know.
totally agree. That should be the metric. Like at the end of the day, what do we want as a metric? We want productivity, human productivity, happiness, and longevity. Like you nail those, and then like we're great as a society. I think the fact though of what we've seen is, look, life expectancy we still know is at a terrible spot right now, right? For like we have way too much self-harm. We have other type of issues still going on. We're still not out of a lot of the full U portion of this. Maternal death rates are still like way too high. There's like a bunch of dumb stuff that we still should solve. And I think we'd like if we're kind of like moving for needle movers. Here's what kind of scares me with some of this stuff is, and this is like really why I kind of say like I think there's an empowerment and like the portion of who you actually make your decisions with. When we were coming up with around a bunch of the strategies around COVID and like COVID vaccinations and what that was, part of the thesis was the old school public health model, which is decisions are made around the dining room table. They're made in the living room. They're a discussion for the family on how you're thinking about it. That turns out to be false. Like that was, with people like Vivek Murthy, others, like a whole bunch of really, really good public health thinkers. But that turns out to be false. You know where it's done? In online forums. As you're scrolling through Instagram, you're looking at what people say on Twitter or X, whatever,
I
Threads.
mean, a
Like,
solid meme will get me thinking for sure. I mean, I'm sort of half joking,
no,
but it's true, right?
it's
Like,
true, right?
but there's a reason
So,
it's a meme, you know.
podcasts,
podcast maybe, right? No, but it's true because like
super
people are like,
influential.
people just kind of go, huh, what about this? And then it's like undermined. So the decision. What was fascinating from a sociological, psychological perspective is people are more willing to listen to their communities or the place where they got their online info, not even their news info per se, that way. So if you kind of carry that forward, what we're starting to see, both in some places good, some places more often than bad, is your interaction point and what you're listening to is an AI system. Like you look at the numbers that have been released just by from OpenAI around some of the self-harm and other issues, and you just run the numbers. They say, like, look, across all queries, here's how much percent it is. And you're just gonna look at the small number. You run those numbers and you get to 1.5 million people a week, each week ideating on some kind of self-harm. 1.5 million people ideating with self-harm, that's very, very like that's stunning numbers. And so as more people interact with this in this ways, I think we w which kind of outcome we have is a lesson that we should take from social media is like we all thought social media was going to be used this way. And look, I'm one of the kind of key people who spent a lot of my career building those. And I'll go, how did people use it? How did people weaponize it? That's the thing. So I think one of the things that we need to do is ask ourselves, really, what do we want to be true in a decade? A decade from now, what if we look at the bad things that could happen, what do we wish we had started today? What kind of policy, what kind of other things, what technology investments would we start today so that in that time period we're on a different trajectory? And that's not like shut everything down. That is not the answer because too much opportunity is there. But it's how do we shape the arc of that trajectory? That to me is the unique opportunity, like the moment that we have.
Yes, and what would you do, right? Magic wand. What is the investment, right, to make today, right? The technology is too great. We all believe that. You know, the numbers and the potential risk use cases are staggering. And, you know, those are all the people, if you look at the mental health numbers, right, who don't have access to care. It's hard to run, you know, the study effectively to say what would happen, you know, if they don't have access to these tools. I guess, yeah, what's your magic wand?
What's
And
my
Matt, jump into,
magic
yeah,
wand? Yeah.
what would you start now? What do you wish started now that's not happening?
Look, so there's a few things that I think are in the easy in the that's easy bucket is there should be a set of things like look, we know what how to do stuff on post-training, right? Like now there's copyright and it's like, look, if you try to say make a Harry Potter image, it's not going to let you, right? Because they're like worried about that. So what you do on some of those things is if there's any shot of self-harm, you should be immediately directing somebody to 988 with the National Suicide Hotline Center. Call, text, you get both directions. If you want something more direct in that way, go to Crisis Text Line at 741-741, short code for texting and to get help. So there's like a bunch of these things that are there. So somebody says those things. Now that corpus of what those things are, imagine we got all the different places to say, what is the universe of what ways people might be ideating with self-harm? And that's a model. That's a model, like that's an intervention model that we should look at and try to say, hey, if you're intervening that way, let's help you. That's one side. The second side is I think we need a consortium that needs to come together across the model players with government to say, hey, how are we going to massively accelerate what like life expectancy could look like through these things? Give us 10 recommendations, kind of type thing of things that we could do. Maybe, and like one of the things should be like, look, let's get out of this API world and let's move to an MCP world. Like we're already playing for two generations old tech. Let's get there so that actually it's not just like you can get access to your healthcare data, but your data is being used on your benefit. We should also be asking ourselves what the new payment model reform needs to look like with AI actually being utilized, because it's not about just replacing doctors or care teams or nurses. It's about really supporting them. And there's a different payment model that needs to go into reform for that. And like, what is that? Is that different CPT codes or those things? I think it's going to be like, we're going to need five iterations of this. Like, there's no way, like, if I had to write legislation today for what that's going to be, like, come on, that's already out of date by the time we get it through. So I think there's that. And then the final one, I think I'd say these are in the easy bucket is like, the public needs to have much better transparency on this stuff of what's being asked, what isn't, like, what do we know? Is it the self-harm numbers? How much product is being used for good healthcare, all those type things. And also, where are the blind spots that are coming at us? That's been really hard even on social media. How long did it take us to figure out that social media is really harmful for teenage girls on body issues? That's only like about 5 years ago, 7 years ago that results came out, given how long the technology's been out there. That's really tough to see and watch because that's a lot of people in that time period that gotten hurt.
I mean, I suspect just on that topic as a quick aside, just because it was so shocking to me. I moved here to the Bay Area in 2014. Okay. And we had little kids at the time. You obviously got to know other people in the community. Most people here in tech, I was the odd, you know, physician, everyone else was. And by the way, most of them were retired at my age. And I'm like, I'm just starting out, guys. But the thing I noticed was that there was a pretty much unanimous in this community, unanimous aversion to allowing their kids to have social media or even the phones or the screen. And I literally live three blocks from, you know, the job's house. I mean, it's this is ground zero for tech, right? And yet that was for me, I was like, whoa, like, because it hadn't really, I mean, obviously you think about it, but and of course I think it's gonna like the smoking, I think it's gonna like the tobacco,
Yeah.
honestly. I think there's gonna be some settlements. I think there's gonna have to be like
Well, this is where I want to be
like
careful because I think one of the proposals out there has been hand this to the courts. Let civil lawsuits take place. Let's let that happen to the courts. The problem is when you hand it to the courts and the courts aren't really have the right access to technologists or the right people to think about it, you're going to get wild card decisions.
And you're going to get people to stop talking to each other because it's going to feel like
Exactly.
now
Now
we're in
we're
legal
putting it into a place
situation.
where the answer is like, I can't do it without lawyers in the room. And what we actually want is a more open approach and discussion. We need to make it safer to share and to show what's going on. And that's going to be very hard as these companies at the valuations they're at and the impact level that they potentially have. That's going to be harder. But it's all the more reason that you share things like car manufacturers share data all the time. Like we have stuff.
Autonomous vehicle world, crash rates, disengagements. What does
That's
that
right.
look like? And it's this interesting balance, actually. And you saw a shift in administration from Biden had a very different perspective on health AI. We were talking about assurance labs gating on the front end. The current administration has taken a much more post-deployment
Yeah,
monitoring
one was
take.
almost all brakes. And a little bit of gas. And now the Trump administration at this moment in time is almost all gas, no brakes, maybe a steering wheel at times. But they're shifting because they're suddenly going, uh-oh, wait, the models are really tough. Like,
And the interesting thing of that too is it's like you can still have gas, and all of us are here talking about because we're so excited about these tools. But it's like if you can force a level of reporting, right? And a little bit, this is what you see in the autonomous vehicle world now. You didn't like what was the driver's license test that the government was going to create before? Like they weren't going to be able to do that successfully. But at the very least, hey, show me how much you're driving. Show me kind of your crash data, what's happening, what's being tested. And that is a level, right? And you can make it fair, right? Because it's, candidly, like to your point of how long it took for social media metrics to come out, OpenAI is sharing a fair amount, right?
that's
And
because
again,
there's
they're being pushed, they're
legislation.
being pushed, they're being pushed, they're being
They're being
pushed,
pushed pretty hard
right?
by
And
California.
this is where, yes, right? A little more legislation to say, hey, there's a minimum level of sharing because it does two things. One, we can catch bad things that do happen, and there will be bad things that happen, and we can slow those down. And the second is the things that are working. Again, how do we show, as Uber and other places came to town, Waymo getting credit now for kind of the reduction in crash rates that happened? You can create positive energy behind this too, when actually across AI for the country, there's not a lot of
Yeah.
positive feelings. And so
Well,
this
like, think about
idea of
this,
forcing
Justin.
some sharing would be amazing.
Well, think about this, right? We have we have food deserts in the country where there's no grocery store or anything. We have healthcare deserts. We have health deserts. There is no access to care. You're going to drive 2, 4 hours. We hear these stories that like we've all lived them too. Like I meet people all across the country who tell me these horror stories of what it takes to get care. In those places, they have nothing. Let's give them a regulatory sandbox that allows this technology to be used to get access to be more empowered for their care. Like, what does that look like? I think there needs to be a certification process, all those things. Those can be figured out. But give them access in that lower liability area with a chance that somebody actually has access to healthcare. But the trick in exchange of that regulatory sandbox is extreme transparency. You have to have
Yes.
extreme transparency and tethered closely with academia,
Yep.
tethered super closely with academia so that we learn. And we should fund that. We should fund that academic exercise as a national priority to figure out how do we solve this. And you backstop it by increasing the amount of healthcare teams that are in those areas because, but that's going to take us a decade or 15 years to get there at least.
I mean, it's a thought experiment for this. Like, as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, I was really, I'm early, a little bit early talking to some of the folks at the Doctronic. The Doctronic obviously went big when they had that thing in Utah, able to prescribe medicines, which sort of checks a lot of the boxes. But I think to the point you're making is really important here. none of those other things were in place. And
Right.
unfortunately, because of maybe it's a lack of, I don't know what the cause is, so I'm not going to
It
perpetrate.
also wasn't a sandbox.
But it
It
wasn't a
wasn't
sandbox. It
all.
wasn't being studied. It was essentially like, okay, we're going to let the free market run wild on this particular thing, and we maybe we'll pick a few drugs that aren't super high risk to allow this thing to, but look at now we've got this backlash. So I think what you're saying is incredibly important, meaning that this is the gas steering wheel and brake, you know, I think picture that you're painting. And I think the Daktronic is going to be an unfortunate casualty of that lack of a framework, because I worry now that there's going to be more pushback against what could have been an incredibly helpful thing for those in care deserts, and a decrease the strain on a health system for routine things. Like, I'm just getting a refill of my blood pressure meds. Do I really need to go 3 hours to a doc to do that? Like, right. So anyway, what you're saying, I think, is exactly where.
By the way, we do this already. We did this already, and people don't even know it. Where did we do it? How did autonomous vehicles work? There was a bunch of federal money that was distributed to people, to those cities, to allow them to actually have specialized models. And some of those places, they're like, hey, look, we actually need to change the city design to allow this to happen. This has happened before. You also do this for cars versus buggies. You need stop sign. Like we have a model where we say, look, in that region or that place, they're willing to take a risk as a local community. Let's give them the grants, let's give them the structure, let's give them the support to see if this can be successful. This is also going on with drones and drone delivery. And so we've had this reluctance slash lack of courage to be able to give and empower people with the regulatory sandboxes for healthcare.
This may be a bit, one of the biggest breakthroughs of the show. I just want to make a note of this, Justin, because I mean,
And some credit, ARPA-H is trying, right? And we have our
ARPA-H
friends
is
there.
supposed to be part of this.
Fair.
This is where we got these. Like every community is an experiment. Every town, every city, every human is an experiment. We just don't know what the experiment is about. And if we ask ourselves in one place, this is working, this is working, this is working, our job is to figure out, okay, what could scale? What are the universal things that can scale? That's once you get that, each of these things is like a spark. It's a little bit of spark. Ignition of that spark into a flame comes from entrepreneurs collaborating with systems. That spark and flame becomes a fire when you bring in capital and you bring the rest of the community along with it. And then that's how we go from a spark of an ecosystem to then like sort of saying, hey, look, here's an experiment that shows electricity is a thing to actually having an electrified grid.
Well, we're not going to top anything we say on that note. As a data scientist, venture capitalist, you have that is exactly the model. DJ, thank you so much for joining us here.
My pleasure. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
letting me do it.
Great having you.